Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Monday morning, 13 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's our Roundtable panel, and what an all-star panel we have for you today. We have political consultant and lobbyist Libby Post here. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning, Ray. How are you?
Nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
Mike Spain is here filling in for Rosemary today.
Happy Monday morning. I'll try to be as combative with Alan as I can.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you're sitting right next to him. You can always slug him.
Nah. No, I think you need to be ebullient. And effervescent.
Okay. Bubbles. He's the associate editor of the Times Union. And, of course, Alan Shartok is here. And he looks like he's in a great – you look like you're in a great mood today, sir.
What do you mean, of course?
You see? It's going to be one of those days. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. And, I got to say I didn't see this. But at least we have to mention it before we start. Trump was on SNL this weekend. Anybody here on the panel see it?
I taped it and then skipped through it and saw most of it.
Yeah. Funny, not funny, worth it, not worth it.
I mean, it was funny. It was medium on Saturday night level. I wasn't falling out of my seat. It was fairly predictable. They were not really harsh on him. The funny opening monologue where two actors portraying him, including Daryl Hammond, who sort of came back on screen to from the past Saturday Night Live troupe, to imitate him as he was standing there and dressed like him. And they did pretty good imitations of him. And, you know, he was fairly Trumpish, you know. He was kind of mocking himself, talking about how great a guy he is and everyone loves him and how he's the leader and the winner. I mean, it didn't sound a lot different than what he says. He was on message. And I thought the opening skit where they mocked the Rachel Maddow forum in South Carolina last week was funnier, actually.
Yeah.
You know, more clever. But anyway, he was there. He didn't commit any faux pas, and they were pretty easy on him. And maybe the Bernie Sanders imitation done by Larry David was reprised. So that's kind of neat. We'll be seeing that through the political season.
So, you know, the ratings were huge. Alan, is there a big political gain to be had by this?
No, I think everybody got themselves into a bad spot. Trump and NBC have had all kinds of problems and splits and things of that kind. And there was a huge resentment by the Hispanic community and others that they were having Trump on. So they tried to be all things to all people. You know, they had Larry David, at the side announcing that he had been given $5,000 to yell, you're a racist, while Trump was on. But in fact, it wasn't good Saturday night stuff. As Mike seems to think, it was sort of okay. You know, they got away with it. It's gone. It's over. They're not going to do it again, obviously. But it was. It wasn't edgy enough for most of the people who love what's on Saturday Night Live most of the time.
Is there an issue of equal time to some extent? Hillary had to do it, or did it, and now Trump did it. Do all the other candidates say, you know, I deserve my shot too?
Well, Hillary did a guest. She just did the bar scene, which was hilarious. He actually hosted, and I saw headlines about that there was this concern around FCC regulations and whether or not they have to give the other ones. But it's not like it's a forum for him to talk about politics.
Yeah.
It is and it's not. It's not like...
He was only on for 11 minutes, I read somewhere.
Total.
When you add it all up. And Hillary was on for a long time for her skit. And she actually introduced Miley Cyrus that night.
Oh,
so
right,
she did come out. You know, she had a little more. But
Ben
Carson said he wouldn't accept an invitation to go on Saturday
Night
Live. You know, some candidates may use it, you know, whether they agree to go on or not. It's been for several elections now. The candidates have gone on and they've sort of played along with very modest, criticism of them or fun being made of them and played along. And I don't think it's hurt them. John McCain did it. Sarah Palin did it. Obama has done it.
What about the process in general, Alan? In other words, in the old days, it did not happen that presidents would go on the late night talk shows. Well, now we have politics and showbiz mixing more and more. Is that a good thing?
I don't know. It's interesting because it does. The rubber and the road really are getting too close because you have entertainment on the one hand, and then you have substance, which is there. I know one thing: it's good for the people who get on. Anything is good. Barnum said it. It's right. Mm-hmm. You know, spell my name right. Whatever. It's all good for them. Nevertheless, it may be too much make-believe for some people. I mean, these policies that these guys are espousing, build a wall, kick 11 million people out of the country, do all of that, those are real policies that are going to really affect people. And I find that by sort of romanticizing it or entertainment-sizing it, you may be doing a disservice to the political process.
You know, I get exactly what you're saying.
Sure.
And yes, there is sort of a disservice, but the line between Hollywood politics, politics, Hollywood politics, entertainment is so thin. And part of it is because we've made it into a game show. You know, we have, you know, the clown car, and I know Alan's going to look at me askance, on the Republican side. Of the debate here, and
what, you think I'm a Republican?
No, because they called Hitler a clown. That's why.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so we've got that going on. We've got Bernie and Hillary on the other side, and it's always going to be fodder for the Jimmy Fallons and the Jay Lenos and the Stephen Colberts of the world. That's for sure.
Maybe that's what was wrong with this. That in fact, the guy that they were supposed to be hitting on was getting a free ride in order to be the host.
Yeah, I mean, he has not gotten a free ride in via Jimmy Fallon or Stephen Colbert. But it's about reaching people. I mean, you know, to pay for 11 minutes of time to reach the amount of people they reach would be an astronomical amount of money, millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. So here they are, sort of making fun of themselves, making them to be a little more human because people see them as, oh, they're running for president, they're better than I am, and they're poking fun of themselves, making themselves a little more human, saving a lot of money.
And let's remember, and it's a ratings issue with the...
Right.
I mean, the reason that everybody lets them get away with murder is because their ratings are always great, not only on Saturday Night Live, but all the
other
Sunday
shows.
Morning shows.
Absolutely.
Even the debates have good ratings for a change.
Right.
And they're making
And that's
money.
Probably him. Yeah. And that's probably Trump.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's really like watching a train wreck. It just hasn't hit the wall yet.
Right. You know, and then there's also this reality show part of this.
Yes.
which is the Republican
ultimate.
Establishment still doesn't get it.
Right.
They don't get that this guy is immensely popular. They say, well, people won't vote for him in the long run. Want to bet?
This is the political version of Survivor. It really is.
Well, and I wrote a column this weekend. I have to apologize in advance for my syndicated...
syndicators,
pieces.
Yes.
Yeah, syndicators.
Jumping
was,
the gun on them.
It was about Pataki. What could he be thinking? And I had a line in there which was, not only has he been relegated, he didn't even make the children's table.
That's right. He's been
He made the high chair.
He's been kicked off. He and Lindsey Graham don't get enough on surveys, various surveys, to be invited to the
What could he be
debate,
thinking?
The debate of
he
the
He wants
lesser
a cabinet position. He wants to do something.
Nah.
Well, I don't know.
No, he's 70 years old. He was the three-term governor of New York. And the greatest insult of all is that Alphonse D'Amato, who made him, he was Geppetto. He made him. He's now endorsed Kasich, for president. They're not going to waste their time on him.
Well, I heard one explanation, which I think is plausible, and that is that George Pataki is a very personable guy, and he likes going out and campaigning. He really enjoys it. So he likes meeting with people and talking about issues and likes being on the campaign trail.
There's an opportunity.
Yeah. And it's probably a tax write-off, too.
Well, that's funny. It's not a
Maybe he's going to write a book, and this is a precursor to writing a book.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows?
Email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Libby Post is here, Mike Spain, Alan Shartok, Ray Graff in for Joe. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency using food scraps and yard waste to create nutrient-rich compost to help conserve water and control weeds. Compost available for purchase, ucrra.org. Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, custom-designed panelized house kits featuring eco-friendly passive and solar design elements, noble-home.net. And from Beacon Arts, inviting listeners to November's second Saturday in Beacon. Special events, gallery openings, artist receptions, tastings, kids welcome, many shops open until 9. Saturday, November 14th, beaconarts.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Monday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Mike Spain is here. Libby Post, Alan Chartok, and you at roundtable@wamc.org. Anything in the mailbag, Alan?
There are. Cody says, good morning, panel. Larry morning. David was the best part of the SNL episode. Perhaps we could get David to run for president and have Bernie as his VP.
Oh, wow. What a ticket.
There you go. And only at WAMC.
To New York Jews.
And Rob...
Nice.
And we should make it clear that
I'm Jewish.
She is not only Jewish, but the head of her synagogue.
Right,
okay.
So I can.
Just in case somebody might have thought they heard something that they didn't.
Right, take offense, right.
Okay, Robert just says, panel, while candidates appearing on TV talk and comedy shows may be contributing to the dumbing down of politics, but it's probably also the only way young voters will see and hear them at all. None of the polls show the 18 to 25 voters paying any attention to the debates, and that's Bob from Albany. Okay, thank you, Bob. That was actually a good letter.
Yeah, I mean, it is certainly a technique to reach an audience that otherwise wouldn't know them.
Right. Yeah. And let's see. No, I think that's pretty well it.
Okay. The top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee says if investigators confirm a claim that the Islamic State group blew up a Russian plane over Egypt over a week ago, it would mean that the extremist group has eclipsed al-Qaeda as the gravest terrorist threat in the world. California Representative Adam Schiff appeared on ABC's This Week. U.S. and British officials say intelligence suggests the plane was likely brought down by a bomb. In fact, this morning, CNN, quoting an unnamed U.S. official, says it's 99.9% certain it was a bomb. British Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond told BBC on Sunday that if the bomb is confirmed, it will require a potential rethinking of airport security in all areas where the extremist group is active.
Well, I mean, that's an easy thing and an obvious thing to say. You know, be careful. On the other hand, Adam Schiff has been great on all of this ever since he left Law & Order.
And, nice.
Okay, all right.
That's not the same Adam Schiff.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Nevertheless, the real story here is Russia. Because, you know, Russia has a huge problem with jihadists. And that is why you can watch Putin really being very afraid of where this is going to go. And that, I believe, is why he is in the corner of Assad. Not that we know that Assad is worse than the people who we're supporting, because we don't know that. We really don't know that. We found out the hard way the last time about that. So, but I am watching Putin in his work, and what I think the guy is just scared to death that this population that he has in Russia is going to really turn on him, and that's what this is all about, I think.
It is frightening. You know, the notion that the terrorism of ISIS is moving to the air, to air passenger travel,
sure.
That's just a frightening prospect that evokes very difficult and painful memories from 2001. And if that is the case, that's a really terrible development. Of course, you're right, Ray. It'll result in a tripling down at airports across the world. And there was criticism that in Egypt there had been lax equipment maintenance at the airport, that there had been lax inspections, and that that might have been a problem. There might have been an insider at the airport. You basically have all the Western countries, most of the world, saying that this was an act of terrorism. And Egypt and Russia are reticent about saying that. And that's they're going to eventually have to acknowledge it, or it's going to look
actions
foolish.
Speak louder than words.
Exactly.
I mean, Russians stopped all travel to Egypt
immediately,
on Friday.
Immediately.
And apparently, according to the New York Times, by yesterday had repatriated 11,000 Russians by government count.
Right.
Repatriated meaning brought them back.
Yeah.
A side note there, I didn't know that many Russians were traveling for tourism to Egypt.
Sharm
el-Sheikh
is a
nice place to go.
Yeah.
You know, it is all very troubling. And I said last week that I thought that this was, before anybody confirmed it, it just made political sense.
Sure.
Russia is trying to bolster Assad in Syria.
Right.
And so, of course, if they can bring down a plane, it sends a message. It's the first, you know, shot over the bow to Russia that we're going to come after you, too. Is this an opportunity for Russia and the United States to sit at the same table together and come together with some strategies to fight ISIS? I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think
there's been other opportunities
that have not
worked.
Right. But, you know, it's, you know, we read the articles this morning about Bibi and Barack. You know, there's the thing about diplomacy is no matter how many bridges are burnt, you keep going back to try to build a new one. And this is an opportunity for us to work together to deal with this. What I call the scourge of the earth. I'm sorry. I know some people on the left might be upset with me, but, you know, this has got to stop. We need to be safe.
And by the way, there's really very little way to be safe. That's the terrible thing here. You know, every time somebody wants an award, some journalist wants an award, they get through the lines at the TSA and they make it. And so even the government auditors have been having trouble. So sorry about that.
You were
out of time?
We're just about out of time. We have to take a break. I would say that if I was a betting man, I would say Putin doubles down now in Syria, and you'll see much more activity out of the Russians.
Except the Russian people do not want. They just
does
don't
he,
want
does
boots
he
on the ground.
Does he truly care?
No, I think he cares.
All right. Email address is roundtable@wamc.org. roundtable@wamc.org. We'll take a break for news. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Monday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe. 9:34 is the time. Alan Chartok is here. Mike Spain and Libby Post on the Roundtable panel. If you want to join in with your opinions, roundtable@wamc.org is the email address. And Alan, anything in the mailbag?
Yeah, there are a few things. Peter in New Paltz says, I believe that most people's opinions of candidates is informed for the most part by seeing them on TV, whether in a debate or on Saturday Night Live. So a candidate who is good on TV does better than one who is not. And Donald Trump is better TV than Jeb Bush. I don't like it, but I have to agree with him. Okay. Stu says, it goes in a different direction. He said, just for a second, topic for discussion. I hope the panel will discuss the strike by the University of Missouri footballers with support from their coach in support of a hunger striker demanding the resignation of the university's president.
I think that the president is going to discuss the issue today, so that's on for tomorrow morning, because I think we'll have some resolution by tomorrow morning.
And basically the story is that the students are saying the president isn't doing enough.
Exactly. And so I believe what I read was that the president is going to address this issue today, and it'll be interesting to see exactly what happens.
Well, so we're talking about the president of the university.
Exactly. And so this was first up for tomorrow, and we will discuss it when we have more events.
It'll define how powerful football teams are at these big schools.
Yeah. Well, it's now become more than just the team. So it's growing exponentially, and we will certainly cover that.
And also, how powerful, and also, Mike, how much they're willing to give up on their own careers if in case it goes against them.
So. Yeah, I mean, most college players, what? Even big schools, most college players are not going to have much of a playing career after college. Only the very elite from
but
the biggest schools.
But hope springs eternal.
Well, you're right. You're right about that.
But not only that, for these kids to stand up like this is really very inspiring, because they're giving up their football, they're giving up what they love, but they want to make sure that these issues are dealt with. I mean, this is...
To say nothing of the coach. Can you imagine the coach saying that things basically appear with these guys and say the college president, his boss, should
well,
be
Well, you're going to make
fired.
A point. And so we'll see what happens. We'll see if the president, in fact, steps down. I think there's a chance that happens. So we'll see. We'll talk about it tomorrow at length on the show.
All right.
And the email address, once again, is roundtable@wamc.org.
I got to say one thing about you, Ray. What's that? A tight ship.
Do I?
Oh, yeah.
Is this a criticism?
No.
No, you want it to be a little more loosey-goosey?
No, no, not at all. Okay. I like the way you do it. I like the way Joe does it. I like the way you do it.
All right, sir. All right, then. President Barack Obama and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will meet for the first time face-to-face in more than a year today. Tensions over the U.S.-backed nuclear deal with Iran continue to strain ties between the longtime allies, and U.S. officials are downplaying the chance of a breakthrough in ongoing security talks and ruling out the prospect of a peace deal between Israelis and Palestinians before President Obama leaves office in 14 months. Today's meeting will also be clouded by the controversy following Netanyahu's appointment of a new spokesman who has spoken derisively about President Obama. Ran Baratz, a conservative commentator, has suggested on Facebook that Obama is anti-Semitic and that Secretary of State John Kerry cannot be taken seriously. Even still, today's meeting between the two leaders is seen as an important step. I'd like to be a fly on the wall for this one.
Oh, boy. It'll be cold. You'll need a jacket.
I think you might be right. Colder than Studio A this morning.
Oh,
well, I think, first of all, we have to believe that both men are committed to positions which they truly believe in. Right? In other words, this is not some guy playing a sort of political role that this will be good for me or bad for me. I think Barack Obama truly believes in his position. I know Netanyahu does and doesn't believe that he should make any concessions whatsoever, which apparently is the problem. I'm going to be honest about this, as somebody who grew up, worshiping the State of Israel and thinking that it was a great thing. I am all for Israel and for its security. And I just want you to believe me that I really mean this. The problem, of course, is that Netanyahu's position is there will never be a peace process while I'm prime minister. There'll never be a two-state solution while I'm prime minister.
It's self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, yeah. So then people, right. The followers get out with knives and do their yeah. thing. He'll say, they would do it anyway. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I know that there certainly are people amongst the Arab side of things who really do believe that no Israel is the only answer. Push it into the sea. And they say so again and again. Yeah, and you got to believe that they mean it. So even we saw Rabin and all the rest, Oslo, even when it happens, it won't stop. Now, if I have any critique at all, what am I? If I'm sitting here, I would say that what ought to happen is that Netanyahu ought to at least show some movement where it probably doesn't matter. Why does he have to keep building new settlements? And to me, that is a mistake on his part. That's all.
Well, he's playing his cards on the next president, clearly.
The next president, he has to assume it's going to be Hillary.
Right.
Well, perhaps there'll be a surprise. But you're right. I mean, what he's doing now is sort of beyond the Obama administration. He's already dismissed it. But what's curious to me about this is, can people diplomats or heads of state, when there's personal hostility, personal chemistry between them, how that can change the course of history. And it can.
No question.
And it has in the past. And it's really unfortunate that both of them can't realize that this is bigger than both of them. But it is a bad personal relationship.
Sure.
The New York Times piece today chronicles how often and how mm-hmm. frequently, they've said things, disparaging things about each other or echoed things. And it's just...
And at bad times, and there's some legitimate cause on both sides for some
irritation. Hard feelings.
Yeah.
Oh, you
well,
bet.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
when a Israeli prime minister comes in invited by the radical right in America.
Right.
And goes before
and
Congress and yeah. stands up.
Yeah. This is, yeah. But on the other hand, the thing about Obama that is so striking is his absolute insistence that you never stop talking and you never stop negotiating and that's the way to do it. Yes.
Well, I think that's an interesting point that you make. Yeah. And in light of the fact that now there is this, I guess admission is the term you use, from the Obama administration that we're ruling out the prospect of a peace deal here with the Palestinians and Israelis. He's still got 14 months to go. It surprises me that he would make that statement.
But it's a practical recognition that whatever does happen to change the dynamic in the Middle East, there's not enough time in his watch to really get anything off the ground. And that's why I think Netanyahu is probably just content to try to do it with Hillary or whoever is in the Oval Office.
You know, I think that Netanyahu is politically tone deaf, and he's not hearing the people in his country who want this to stop. He's not hearing anyone else except the right wing of his party and the orthodox, the ultra orthodox rabbinate, who really does control a lot of his politics now. Mm. And it's very, very disturbing. And as a Jew, and Alan and I are, you know, the two Jews in the room here with 17 opinions between the two of us, you know, we want to, and we believe in Israel's right to exist. And I will always believe in Israel's right to exist. But to continue down this path is a path of one that will never have a resolution. And, you know, we see what's happening with ISIS. We see what's happening in other hotspots around the world. This is something that's within people's grasps. This is something that people can actually accomplish if they want to, is to come together with some type of peace and create a two-state solution. But there's this intransigence of, if I give an inch, then they're going to take the whole 25 square miles, and you know.
And let's remember who shot Rabin.
Right.
And who,
that's
fed,
right. That's
and
right.
who
our
shot
own,
Sadat.
That's right, our own extremists. And there's a big problem. We have problem with ultra-right extremists here in the United States. You know, it's Oklahoma City, and we see more and more of it, all the church burnings in, you know, down south. And they have it there, too. It's really very disturbing.
The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll go through a few in the mailbag, and then we'll find out what's in the Times Union coming up.
Okay, and Joseph says, oh, are we off?
No, go ahead. Oh. We'll do the mail, and then we'll take a break.
Okay, yeah. Okay. And Joseph says, false equivalence. Netanyahu is not Obama's equal. He is a supplicant. He has come begging from the most powerful man in the world, whom he has insulted. Israel should send somebody else. Right. Israel's not sending anybody else. The guy's the prime minister.
Right.
James says, okay, an important member of Netanyahu's staff has called President Obama an anti-Semite and Secretary of State a comedian or clown, and Netanyahu hasn't fired him. Under Netanyahu, Israel's policies are straining the U.S.-Israel alliance and making it more of a foe than an ally. Netanyahu, a racist, says Jim. And Rick says, panel, Marvin Calvo just published a book on Putin. He'd be a good person to interview, and we certainly would love to do that. And Tom says, good morning, Roundtable. How is the downing of this plane any different than any other terrorist acts since the 60s, 70s, hijacking planes to Cuba, blowing planes up in the desert, Lockerbie, Twin Towers? Why am I supposed to be so fearful? Well, because these things tend to get out of hand. That's why you should be fearful, and you should be fearful if you're on the plane. And I guess that's it.
Once again, the email address is roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Healthy Endeavors Medicine, Guilderland, New York, offering personalized functional medicine evaluations and care, including EndoPET testing, non-invasive assessment of blood vessels and heart, 518-355-2060. The Green Toad Bookstore, Oneonta's independent bookseller with books and antiques, educational toys, home decor, and gifts, greentoadbookstore.com. The Stafford Owens Law Firm, advising North Country and Canadian clients in matters of cross-border trade and business law, PlattsburghLawyers.net. And from Oakwood Friends School, Poughkeepsie, an independent college preparatory boarding and day school for grades 6 through 12, dedicated to creating a dynamic community of learners since 1796, OakwoodFriends.org.
Hello again. Good morning. Welcome to your Monday morning, 9:46 on this lovely, crisp Monday morning. The roundtable panel it is, don't you know? Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Alan is here. Mike Spain is here. Libby Post is here. And Mike Spain is the associate editor of the Times Union. A couple of interesting pieces this morning in the TU.
Probably the most interesting is our lead story today by Robert Gavin. He covers the courts for us. It has to do with the election just last week to fill a vacancy on state Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. This is for a massive judicial district that includes Albany and Rensselaer and Columbia and Greene County and goes down through Ulster all the way to Sullivan County. And the two people running for the seat were an attorney in Albany, Christina Reba, who actually works for the court system, works for the Appellate Division of State Supreme Court, which is based here in Albany, and it oversees all the courts in the eastern and central part of New York, all the way to the Canadian border. And she was a staff member on that, and she was running against a town of Colony from here in Albany County, Justice Norman Massary. Well, it turns out, according to Rob's story today, that on the eve of the election, that would be last Monday on November 2nd, Christina Reba was fired from her job in the court system for alleged ethical violations. Now, I should say that neither Reba nor her boss, the chief judge in the appellate division, Karen Peters, have returned emails or phone calls that we have made from the Times Union to have them comment on it. And others in the campaigns have declined comment. But evidently what happened was during the campaign, Reba, who, while working for the court system, was using the court system's email to solicit support among employees of the court system. And earlier in the election campaign, she declined to be interviewed by a judicial screening committee, which is a common practice where lawyers will question the candidates and rate them anything from not qualified to highly qualified.
Highly qualified.
Highly
qualified. Do you know why she did that?
She was her reasoning, according to what she told her supporters, was that she was actually part of the process to pick this committee and thought it would be inappropriate for her to go across and go before it. But having said that, in communications that she made to supporters and to solicit support back in October, she said, "While it wouldn't be proper for me to go before the committee, I would have likely been rated qualified." Now, some say that that's an ethical violation for you to say out of one side of your mouth, "I didn't go before the committee," but then to assert what they would have rated you at.
As you said, it's a very interesting story, but you don't really think that a lot of people are going to follow every jot and tittle of the
That's one of the problems. And they're generally not very exciting campaigns. Rules by the state's Commission on Judicial Conduct prohibit a judge or a judicial candidate engaging in political activity.
But she won.
Well, not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah, there's 8,000 uncounted votes, and she's ahead by 4,000 in this sprawling district, so she
sounds like she won.
With
full disclosure, I worked on Norm's campaign. Mm-hmm. Okay, as a political consultant,
I worked for the other guy.
The losing side.
What may eventually be the losing side?
Right, yeah. Right. You know, he would have to get almost all of those absentee ballots to flip over. But you know, she wrote a letter to people that got out into the legal community. Yeah, she said she wasn't going to go before the local panel here, and that it would be a waste of her time to go to New York City to go before the panel there, because she had the opportunity to do that. Okay. You know, the issue is this woman will become our next state Supreme Court justice. And what does that say?
Happens.
Well, it's complicated. She was fired for ethical breaches, according to the story today, by the chief judge on the appellate division. She'll now be reporting to that chief judge as a member of the bench when she gets sworn into office. So it will at least be awkward. Now, the other complication here is that many people were encouraging Christina Reba's campaign because the courts have been under a lot of criticism for not having any diversity. Very few women have been elected to state Supreme Court, and very few minorities are on the courts, and there's none in this region. And she's an African-American. So to have an African-American elected to state Supreme Court would be a major achievement. But this has now got a cloud over it, and she's accused of ethical violations. It doesn't disqualify her from being on the bench, but it certainly will be an awkward situation should she end up being
She will
elected.
Be under an even greater microscope. With every single decision that she makes.
Yeah, judges sometimes get thrown out. I'm not predicting she will.
No, but sometimes they do.
On the other side, sometimes people have questions about, you know, inexperienced or some other questions about them, come into office and they rise to the occasion, mm-hmm. end up having a stellar judicial career, which could happen here also.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then there was the story, and in the North Country, a massive story with regard to Alcoa.
Well, it came out last week that Alcoa Aluminum, Pittsburgh-based Alcoa Aluminum, is going to back off its plans to rehabilitate one of its factories in the North Country of New York near Messina and close the other one, throwing 500 people out of work.
That's a lot.
That is huge.
For the state, it is.
These are good-paying jobs, and it's up along the Canadian border near the St. Lawrence River. But they're going to leave behind a lot of pollution. They have a 2,700-acre plant that has PCBs.
Are they closing
other,
the
other
whole
contaminants?
Place?
Yes, they're shutting the whole place down. They're going to be required to do some cleanup, but that means sealing a lot of this into the ground. This will seep into the groundwater. It's going to be a problem for a long, long, long time, and it's really hitting the economy of the North Country. But it also talks about a general problem that upstate New York has. You have it in Fort Edward, where General Electric Company is this year, in the next month, closing its plant to make electrical capacitors, moving that operation to Florida, losing a lot of jobs in the region, and they have spent $1 billion to clean up the PCBs that plant in Fort Edward poured into the Hudson River for decades. But there's still a lot of PCBs in the river that need to be cleaned up, and there's a lot of debate over what GE's role in that is. So you have these major companies that for decades, polluted while they were providing jobs, and then they move out and leave the mess behind, and they leave an economic mess behind.
So, Mike, that's a good report, but I have to say that this is not good for Andrew Cuomo, who has made his signature about bringing jobs to upstate New York. When you lose a plant like Alcoa, for 500 jobs, that's humongous.
In St. Lawrence County, that is. That's an enormous thing. And just last week, the Entergy, the company that runs the Fitzpatrick Nuclear Power Plant on Oswego Lake in the town of Scriba, they announced that they want to close that plant. That's another 600 jobs. So there's, trying to revitalize upstate New York, there are certainly challenges before the governor.
Governor Cuomo and Senator Chuck Schumer a couple of days ago said they have not given up the fight with regard to Alcoa.
That's right. And they actually, in the same week, were saying the same thing about the nuclear power plant in Oswego or near Oswego. They're trying desperately to keep these employers going. They'll probably, this Alcoa plant, one of the reasons that it was Reynolds Aluminum that operated it for years and then were taken over by Alcoa, that it was successful was because it had cheap electricity from the New York State Power Authority coming through the St. Lawrence power system.
Sure.
And so the state had done a lot to help it grow and help it be there. And the likelihood of another company coming in onto this polluted property to redevelop it in the middle of North Country is...
Sure. And it's very old stock.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not talking
about... 1902.
These are old buildings and the rest of it. But it's not good for Andrew, I don't think. And Ray, when I was saying that before, I noticed your eyes were shifting back and forth.
What do you mean?
Well, how your eyes shift back and forth sometimes.
They do that anyway.
When you disapprove of something.
No, not disapproving. I just wanted to let you know that Chuck Schumer and Governor Cuomo both said that they're not done fighting on the Alcoa situation.
What do you think they're going to say? And your eyes are shifting back and forth.
I'm keeping an eye on the clock. I'm trying to bust the show.
One of the last things about that is that, we keep on, buying people to come and set up their businesses here. So the GEs, which are not famous for paying taxes and doing things like that, at what point does the equilibrium shift?
Well, Reynolds Aluminum provided a lot of jobs for the North for decades, for more than 100 years.
Yeah, a lot of people may have had hats made out of aluminum.
Where's yours today?
But they're getting out of the smelting business. That's what this plant that they're closing does. Yeah. And they were going to clean up and try to rehabilitate another part of the plant where they employed hundreds of others in the past and just are really abandoning the whole thing.
The bauxite, industry. You know what bauxite is, right?
It is the raw material from which aluminum is made, Alan.
And raw material from which comes from birds, doesn't it?
Bauxite?
What?
Yeah.
I thought it was mined in Bolivia.
Yeah, from the
birds. You're talking about guano or something here?
Yeah,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but maybe I'm wrong.
We need somebody from an eighth grade earth science class to step in here.
Bird poop is not on the chart of elements. I just want to let you know.
Wow, I had no idea you went into that that realm. Your expertise knows no bounds.
Yeah, it's
incredible. Roundtable. Roundtable at WAMC.org is the email address. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Got about it. 2 minutes here. Anything in the email bag?
Yeah, there is.
All right.
Okay, and Rick says, see the front page of today's Middletown Times Herald Record where town officials lied to a contractor about a building at Stewart International Airport not having asbestos, school kids at risk, major story. Okay, thank you for that, Rick. Thank you to Rose, says, hi, Roundtable. And then there's a thing where you're supposed to go, but we don't do that. In other words, you can't give us a thing.
Yeah. A link.
It's called a link.
A thing. Bauxite. Okay. And Tony says, Netanyahu, like most worldwide politicals, is something, a word we don't read on the radio, to the people who keep him in the lifestyle, which include being powerful, he's used to. In its case, it's the Likud Party. What do you think we've got here? Same old, just like over there. These people are used in the vernacular as sick in the head. Okay. Ray says, dear Roundtable, the Times Union reported that Christina Arriba did eventually submit to the judicial panel in this article, and there's one of those links, Mike, I don't know. Mm-hmm. See one of those links. That we don't do. Okay. Natalie says, I don't know. Margaret says, see the front page of today's Middletown. We did that. Okay.
Yeah.
We did that already.
It's worth doing it again.
Well, okay.
I wasn't really listening the first time.
That seems to be it.
Okay. Well, that was nice. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
That's very condescending, and I believe it was a shot.
No, not at all. Yeah. The email address again.
I found it genuine, Ray.
Thank you, Mike Spain of the Times Union. Very nice work today, and good luck resurrecting the Knickerbocker News. We have our fingers crossed.
We always would like to do that.
Yeah. What are your eyes doing?
Moving around. Libby Post, always good to have you on the program.
Lovely to be here.
Your scientific knowledge, thanks for bringing it to the table.
You know, I just want to say, the Regents was stolen the year that I had to take my chemistry Regents. I was very happy.
You see, well, you...
And geometry, too. I was really happy.
You would have done well, obviously.
Yeah, so. maybe.
All right, thanks again, everybody, for tuning into this hour number one roundtable panel, such as it is. Hour number two is on the way.